On Christmas Day, the 25th of December, 2024, the People's Republic of China celebrated the occasion of the 13th anniversary of the inauguration of the Three Gorges Dam, which is still to this day the largest and most impressive hydroelectric project ever accomplished in human history. Spanning across China's Yangtze River, the Three Gorges Dam cost roughly $34 billion to construct, and it produces enough electricity to fully power all of the needs of a moderately sized modern country like the entire Netherlands. So titanic is the scale of the Three Gorges Dam that its construction has resulted in a measurable impact on the Earth's rotation that'll last for millions of years long after our own species goes extinct. Daylight hours are now 0.06 microseconds longer than they were before the dam. However, only a few days after the Three Gorges Dam's 13th anniversary, the Chinese government made an astonishing surprise announcement. It had just approved of another brand new hydropower project that will somehow absolutely dwarf the scale of the Three Gorges Dam in just about every way conceivable. Unlike the Three Gorges Dam, which was constructed almost in the center of China, this new dam that China announced, which still doesn't have an official name yet, will be built in an incredibly remote, sparsely populated part of the country, deep within the towering Himalayan mountains of Tibet. Unlike the Yangtze, it'll also be built on a river that until now you've probably never even heard about, Tibet's Yarlung Po River. But whenever it's eventually finished, the Chinese government expects that this new dam built across this remote and obscure Himalayan river will be capable of producing an astonishing 300 billion kilowatt hours of electricity per year, roughly triple the power capacity that's currently manageable by the Three Gorges Dam. The scale of this power will be so colossal that all on its own, this new Himalayan mega dam would be fully capable of providing for all of the annual electricity needs of modern-day Germany. And in order to complete it within this very remote and geographically challenging environment, the Chinese government projects that it will end up costing around 1 trillion yuan, or about 137 billion US dollars, about four times the price tag that it cost to finish the Three Gorges Dam, and making it among the most expensive engineering mega projects to ever be attempted in human history, on a comparable scale to the cost of the International Space Station program. And China will not only have to overcome the financial challenges to finish the dam out either, it'll have to overcome the construction site's unique geographic and geologic challenges as well. Massive risks of earthquakes and landslides, and the sharp geopolitical objections to the project that have already come from nations further downstream the river, like India and Bangladesh, who fear that China could be building the new dam to weaponize a significant amount of their water supplies during an intensifying period of climate change and water scarcity, leaving tens of millions of their citizens' water needs at the veritable mercy of Beijing. And in order to fully understand and appreciate how utterly insane this whole project really is, it helps to start out with the geography and the history of the river where this new dam is being built on. The wild river that before this video you probably never even heard of, the Yarlung Po. An utterly raw and untamed river, the Yarlung Po begins high up in the glaciers of Tibet as so many other of Asia's greatest rivers do. It flows from the west of Tibet to the east for roughly 1,600 kilometers before it suddenly and violently U-turns at this location, known as the Great Bend, before then radically shifting its course to the south through India and later Bangladesh, where it empties out into the Bay of Bengal, and where it respectively becomes known as the more well-known Brahmaputra River in India, and later as the Jamuna River in Bangladesh. While the river is still known as the Yarlung Po as it flows through Tibet and China, it is the highest elevated major river that can be found anywhere on the Earth, with an average elevation of about 4,000 meters above sea level, nearly as high as the highest peaks in the Alps are. Flowing through the Himalayan mountains themselves, the river is located in such a remote, sparsely populated, and difficult-to-reach part of the world that for most of human history, it wasn't even entirely clear if the Yarlung Po and the lower Brahmaputra in India were even the same river at all. In the late 19th century, there was significant speculation among geographers that the two rivers were indeed probably the same, but there had yet to be any scientifically conclusive proof. The quest to become the first to prove that they were the same river was even further hyped up by the peculiar differences in elevation that was measured between them, since the Brahmaputra River was thousands of meters lower in elevation than the Yarlung Po was. This led to runaway speculation at the time that somewhere deep in the then uncharted and unexplored wilds of Tibet, the two rivers could have been linked by the biggest waterfall on the planet, which only further encouraged daring explorers to set off into the Himalayas in search of the proof. It ultimately wouldn't be all the way until the year 1913, when an expedition finally confirmed that the Yarlung-Tsangpo and the Brahmaputra were indeed the same river. And although no massive single waterfall was discovered linking them as many had initially hoped, what they actually did end up discovering was arguably even more impressive, and is still nothing less than one of the most poorly known about great natural wonders on the planet. From its source high in Tibet to where it becomes the Brahmaputra lower in India, the Yarlung-Tsangpo has to roar down through nearly 8,000 meters of elevation. Around the great bend of the Yarlung-Tsangpo, where the river violently arcs for roughly 500 kilometers and makes that sharp U-turn toward India, there's an especially violent 160 kilometer long or so section of it, where the river rapidly plunges in elevation by more than 2,000 meters. The steepest drop of any major river on the planet, and which forms a gorge that's roughly three times the depth of the Grand Canyon in the United States, as measured from the nearby mountain summit to the Yarlung-Tsangpo's riverbed. In fact, this canyon throughout the Great Bend that the river carves through the Himalayas here is now widely recognized as being both the longest and the deepest canyon anywhere on the Earth's surface, which has earned it the nickname as the Yarlung-Tsangpo Grand Canyon. For decades after Tibet was invaded and annexed by China in 1950, this majestic but obscure natural wonder was strictly off-limits to outsiders, and was generally hidden from the outside world until the government began issuing permits to visitors again beginning in the 1990s, which then led to another modern race to become the first person to successfully kayak through the world's longest and deepest canyon. But the conditions are so wild and extreme here that kayakers began referring to the Yarlung-Tsangpo as the Everest of Rivers, another nickname and legacy for the world's highest major river that has remained for decades. Multiple people lost their lives attempting to kayak through the river's Grand Canyon in the 1990s, and it wasn't all the way until 2002 when a team finally managed to successfully kayak through the canyon's entire descent. Throughout the entire history of the region, it's still believed that no single human has ever managed to travel along the Yarlung-Tsangpo's entire length from beginning to end, a theoretical achievement that's still waiting to be claimed by someone who's either brave or foolish enough to try it. It is believed that for years, if not even decades, the Chinese government was also well aware of the Yarlung-Tsangpo's enormous hydroelectric potential and was quietly busy researching the feasibility of harnessing it just behind the scenes. You see, China possesses by far the largest latent hydropower potential out of all of the world's countries today, with enormous water volumes crashing down through the country in multiple giant rivers from the mountains in provinces like Tibet, Sichuan, and Yunnan. China possesses nearly three times the amount of hydropower potential as the United States possesses, and roughly double the amount of hydropower potential as Brazil, the country with the second highest potential globally. Tibet alone represents roughly 30% of China's total nationwide hydropower potential. And all on its own, Tibet has nearly the same amount of hydropower potential as the entire United States has. And yet, Tibet is extremely underdeveloped, geographically rugged, and sparsely populated. It's basically the size of the entire southwestern United States, and yet its population is only about 3.6 million people, about the same size as just the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area in the U.S. state of Minnesota. As such, Tibet's enormous hydropower potential that's just sitting there is almost entirely undeveloped still, with the province's currently installed capacity representing just 1% of Tibet's technically exploitable potential. And in the very near future, China will need to increase that exploitation of Tibet's hydropower potential in order to meet their ambitious renewable energy and climate goals. Xi Jinping has set out goals for China to reach peak carbon emissions by no later than 2030, and to reach full carbon neutrality by no later than 2060. In order to reach these lofty goals, Tibet's massive and still largely untapped hydropower potential will have to be finally cracked open. Across the country, China's already built more than 20,000 dams that are higher than 15 meters just since the 1950s, and hydropower already accounts for China's second biggest source of electricity, remaining only behind coal. Hydropower already makes up about one-fifth of China's total energy production today, But in order to further expand hydropower's share and to further reduce the country's reliance on coal, Tibet's currently 99% untapped hydropower potential, that's about on a scale of all of the hydropower potential in the United States, will need to begin being exploited. And the single largest source of potential hydropower in Tibet is right here at that great bend of the Yarlung-Tsang Po River, along that stretch of the river where it crashes down more than 2,000 meters over around 160 kilometers. As the Yarlung-Tsang Po passes through the Great Bend, it carves out the deepest canyon in the world, between the mountain of Gyalha Peri to the north at an elevation of nearly 7,300 meters, and the mountain of Namcha Barwa to the south at an elevation of nearly 7,800 meters, the 27th highest mountain in the world. The plan to harness the Yarlung-Tsang Po's massive kinetic energy as it crashes through this canyon, as it's currently understood, will basically probably look something like this. A high dam will be constructed roughly at the start of the Yarlung-Tsang Po's Great Bend, at about the location of this small town known as Paizhen, which will hold the river's waters back before they can enter into the Great Bend, which will create a vast reservoir behind it that will probably result in the flooding and displacement of an unknown number of local Tibetan communities that will have to be relocated elsewhere. At about the precise location of this dam, a series of at least three gigantic tunnels will be drilled fully beneath the entirety of Mount Namcha Barwa, the 27th highest mountain in the world, connecting the Yarlung-Tsang Po behind the dam to the other end of the Great Bend that's roughly 2,400 meters lower in elevation. Each of these tunnels will have a diameter of about 13 meters and will run for a length of about 34 kilometers beneath the mountain as they descend down those 2,400 meters. The dam will enable the water in the Yarlung-Tsang Po to be diverted away from the Great Bend and thrown down these colossal tunnels beneath the mountain instead, crashing down 2,400 meters of rapid vertical drop before exploding out of the other end and turning turbines along the way to generate gobsmackingly ludicrous levels of power. The current expectation is that this system will be capable of producing an annual capacity of roughly 60 gigawatts of energy, or about 300 billion kilowatt hours of electricity, roughly triple the amount of electricity that is currently being produced by the Three Gorges Dam, and roughly enough electricity to fully power the entire country of Germany. In other words, this project all on its own could satisfy nearly 8% of China's entire current electricity needs, and all of it with green renewable hydropower that'll give China significantly more flexibility to continue phasing out the remaining coal plants, and to meet their ambitious goal of full carbon neutrality by 2060. But to say that it will all be easy for China to do all of this would be foolish. As you can probably imagine, building out a huge dam and a series of massive tunnels beneath a mountain in the Himalayas presents numerous interesting challenges from an engineering and logistics perspective that'll be very difficult to overcome. The reason why the Great Bend exists where it does in the first place is not an accident of geography. It is directly the result of the titanic and beneath-the-surface collision between the Indian and Eurasian tectonic plates that has been going on continually for the past 50 million years. As the Indian plate has been slowly but massively colliding into the Eurasian plate, it has created two sort of wedged corners at the plate's edges that represent the most intensely deformed parts of the Himalayan mountains. Over millions of years, it's been this constant pushing and squeezing of this northeast corner of the tectonic collision that shaped the Great Bend of the Yarlung-Tsang Po River, and also why it's one of the most tectonically active regions in the world today that's frequently subjected to catastrophic earthquakes. Out of all of the major earthquakes across the entire 20th century that measured greater than an 8.0 on the Richter scale, a full 15% of them all just took place in the Himalayas. And since 1901, more than 4,000 quakes of a magnitude 4.5 or greater have been recorded in this region as well. The epicenter of one of the most powerful earthquakes ever recorded in history, a magnitude 8.6 quake that struck in 1950, happened just 200 kilometers away from the Great Bend in India's northeastern Assam state. The damage from that quake greatly affected the area around the Great Bend. Buildings were completely destroyed, and around 1,800 people were killed despite the Great Bend's sparse population. And afterwards, there were frequent aftershock quakes that continued rocking the Great Bend area for about another year. 12 aftershock quakes of magnitude 6.0 or greater impacted the Great Bend area over the following year, which continued causing damage and exacerbating other risks in the Great Bend like landslides and mudslides. The 1950 8.6 magnitude quake caused multiple high cliffs around the Yarlung-Tsingpo's Great Bend to collapse in massive landslides, while avalanches and glacier collapses were also caused as well. Because of the continued tectonic activity around the Great Bend today, there are still multiple mountains around the region that are presently considered to be in an unstable state, that are particularly susceptible to collapses, avalanches, and landslides. There are believed to be dozens of points of potential major future collapses that present enormous challenges for the engineers and future operation of the dam to be concerned about. And the physical challenges don't just stop there either. Because the Indian tectonic plate is still actively crashing into the Eurasian plate, the uplift rate of the Earth's crust in the area of the Indian plate's northeast corner around the Great Bend is generally believed to be around 5 to 10 millimeters per year. Mount Namcha Barwa, the mountain where the dam's planners want to drill those tunnels under, is troublingly still growing at a particularly fast rate of about 6 centimeters per year, though. This fact is going to be especially difficult to overcome over the long term, because within 17 years, Mount Namcha Barwa will have gained about one additional meter of elevation, throwing the location of the tunnels beneath the mountain off from their original location by the same meter of distance. How exactly the engineers plan to overcome this phenomenon over the long term has not yet been disclosed. All of this is why many analysts have referred to this Himalayan megadam as the riskiest megaproject ever undertaken in human history. Moreover, the extreme remoteness of the location where this whole project is being planned in means that there's very little existing infrastructure in place to handle all of the massive construction and excavation requirements that'll be needed. The population around the Yarlung-Tsingpo's Great Bend today is extremely tiny at only around 24,000 people. Up until very recently in 2013, the Madog County in Tibet, where the Great Bend is largely located, wasn't even connected to the rest of China by a major road that was accessible all year round. Transporting the enormous numbers of workers, equipment, and construction materials to what is still a deeply remote and difficult to access location will present its own set of unique logistical challenges, while China will also have to painstakingly and expensively build out the transmission lines from the project to transport the massive amounts of electricity that they'll be producing back to the more heavily populated and urbanized east of the country. All of this is what will make this project so outrageously expensive, and why the Chinese government is currently projecting an estimated price tag of around $137 billion for it. But while these technical and engineering difficulties may be overcome with enough effort, there are many people who believe that the project's greatest difficulties are going to be political rather than technical. For one thing, the diversion of water away from the Great Bend through those tunnels beneath Mount Namcha Barwa will dramatically reduce the flow of the water within the Great Bend itself, permanently altering this section of the riverbed structure. It's believed that approximately 50% of the sediment discharge that makes its way down into the Brahmaputra part of the river in India is deposited within the Great Bend part of the river in Tibet. But if the water flow within the Great Bend is severely depleted or even eliminated by the construction of the dam, it stands that a significant amount of these nutrient-rich sediments that usually flow through the Brahmaputra and later Yamuna River that fertilize Indian and Bangladeshi floodplains will be effectively eliminated, with potentially catastrophic consequences for Indian and Bangladeshi agriculture. To make matters even worse, the dam and the tunnel's potential blocking of sediment could also lead to increased riverbank erosion further downstream as well, which would be a particularly nasty development for Bangladesh, who's the furthest downstream and who's already dealing with severe losses of land to the ocean due to rising sea levels. If their section of the Yamuna River experiences increased paces of erosion because of this Chinese megadam blocking its sediment restoration, then it could lead to even further levels of seawater intrusion from the Bay of Bengal into Bangladesh's coastal areas. Case studies from China's already existing series of dams that they've constructed along their section of the Lankang Mekong River have shown that their large dams can reduce sediment flows through rivers by more than 50%, leading not only to erosion and soil fertility problems further downstream, but a biodiversity collapse and fish population decline problems as well. Huge dams like this severely disrupt the migratory patterns of river fish, whose livelihoods an estimated 2 million fishermen in both India and Bangladesh further downstream economically rely upon. India and Bangladesh alike, obviously, massively rely upon their sections of this river. Within India, the Brahmaputra section of the river supports almost 130 million people and irrigates about 6 million hectares of agricultural farmland. Even further downstream in Bangladesh, within the Jamuna section of the river, its continued uninterrupted flow is literally vital to Bangladesh's entire state survival, and its whole massive population of more than 170 million people. Despite how only 8% of the Brahmaputra-Jamuna River Basin exists within Bangladesh, this river system provides for more than 65% of all of Bangladesh's water supply, including about 55% of all of Bangladesh's irrigation needs. Bangladesh and India alike are, perhaps understandably, deeply fearful and suspicious of China's motives behind building this new Himalayan mega dam. A report from 2022 by the Bangladesh Ministry of Environment, Forest, and Climate Change found that even just a 5% reduction in the Brahmaputra's flow could end up resulting in a 15% drop in agricultural output in certain parts of the country. Not too far away in the future of 2040, two of the most heavily water-stressed areas in the world will be virtually all of India and northeast China, the two most heavily densely populated places on the planet, with water-rich Tibet sitting directly between them. India and Bangladesh alike are both fearful that if China actually ends up building out this dam along the Yarlung-Tsang Po, Beijing will effectively control the tap to a significant amount of their own water supplies, giving China the theoretical ability to deliberately hold back water on the river or to decide on strategically flooding the river in order to exert pressure on India or Bangladesh during an unrelated crisis or a negotiation. But in many ways, at least for India, these fears appear to be pretty overblown. Despite about half of the Brahmaputra River Basin existing within China, the Yarlung-Tsang Po section of the river actually only contributes a minority to the basin's total water discharge. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has estimated that the waters from China contribute to only 30% of the Brahmaputra's total flow. The vast majority of the remaining flow in the Brahmaputra comes from rainfall further downstream within the lower elevated areas of India itself, which might come as less of a surprise when you realize that this area of India where the Brahmaputra runs through is literally one of the rainiest locations on the entire planet. China could still, at least in theory, use the dam to restrict that other 30% of the Brahmaputra's flow, though, which would be pretty bad for India and Bangladesh, but perhaps less apocalyptically bad as some other commentators on this have suggested. Nonetheless, India and Bangladesh are not particularly happy about China having this potential ability at all in the first place, which could be made worse during a particularly bad dry season when the rainfall isn't contributing as much to the river's overall flow downstream. And nor are they happy about the potential ecological damages to their fisheries, soil fertilities, and increased riverbank erosion rates that the dam could cause for them as well. China has promised that the project will never negatively impact India or Bangladesh in any way, and they've promised that the water flow of the Yarlung-Tsang Po into the lower Brahmaputra will not be impacted by the project at all. But, based on the rather negative experiences that Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand have seen from China's construction of other dams on the upper reaches of the Mekong River, and owing to China and India's frequently adversarial geopolitical relationship, their trust in China's word isn't exactly very high. China never consulted with either India or Bangladesh in any way before they unilaterally declared that they were just constructing the dam. And there's currently no treaty on water sharing on the river that exists between China, India, and Bangladesh either, meaning that there's currently no legal mechanism in place for either India or Bangladesh to resist China holding back water flows on the river after they finish the dam. India is also anxious about the mega dam's location being placed just kilometers away from the extremely contentious line of actual control, their heavily disputed border with China. Across the whole Himalayan region, India and China dispute multiple territories that collectively add up to about the size of the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, the single largest chunk of which is the Indian-controlled and administered state of Arunachal Pradesh, that's immediately just to the south of the Great Bend and the site of China's proposed mega dam. China claims the entirety of Arunachal Pradesh and its 1.4 million people for itself, and refers to the territory as South Tibet instead. Thus, one of India's greatest fears is that the construction of this mega dam so close to this disputed territory will enable China to rapidly develop its side of the border with advanced infrastructure and energy links that'll enable them to project even further power south into Arunachal Pradesh once it's all finished. So, very shortly after China first announced the Yarlung-Tsang Po mega dam project back in 2020, India decided to announce their own retaliatory dam on the lower Siang River, immediately downstream. at an estimated price tag of $13.2 billion. This would become the largest dam ever built in India, if realized. The Indian government has argued that this dam's construction would be necessary to offset the negative effects of the Chinese mega dam further upstream, since its big water reservoir would help to offset any potential disruptions in the Brahmaputra's water flow coming from China. But India's construction of another mega dam on the river to counter China's even bigger mega dam stands to just impact Bangladesh, the furthest downstream, even more negatively. India's mega dam will exacerbate the already negative effects of China's mega dam on Bangladesh even further, blocking even more sediment from reaching Bangladesh and further negatively affecting Bangladesh's soil fertility and riverbank erosion rates, and disrupting even more of Bangladesh's river fisheries. All as Bangladesh also exists on the front lines of climate change and is expected to experience catastrophic flooding levels later this century. As it currently stands now, China expects that its Himalaya mega dam will be completed in fully operational by the year 2033, within 8 years of this video's release date. And it'll be extremely interesting to see what developments happen surrounding this project over the 8 years between now and then. Of course, there's way more events going on with China right now in addition to this new mega dam project that are also important to keep track of. Just this past month alone, the US government indicted 12 Chinese nationals for hacking and cyber espionage and put up a $10 million reward leading to their arrest. The Chinese EV company BYD surpassed Tesla in revenue figures. President Donald Trump denied that Elon Musk would be briefed on America's top-secret war plan with China due to conflict of interest concerns. China said that they were prepared for economic shocks as the new tariffs from the Trump administration loomed, while Taiwan reported that they detected 59 Chinese aircraft flying around their island and that they are preparing themselves for a potential full-scale Chinese invasion in 2027, within just 2 years from now. The head of the U.S. Strategic Command has stated that Xi Jinping has ordered the Chinese military to be ready to invade Taiwan by 2027. And while that might sound pretty objective at first, when you look at the sources of where the reporting on this is coming from, you'll notice that the overwhelming majority of it is coming from more right-wing sources, with hardly any reporting on it at all from left-leaning sources. So, yeah, there's a lot going on from a lot of different sources and biases that are reporting on it all. To help myself keep track of everything, I love using this video's sponsor, Ground News. Their tools enable me to quickly compile and compare regional and local sources from important stories around the world that help me to develop my own informed viewpoints. And I cannot stress just how critical an ability that is. And not only is Ground News a massive aid in spotting biases and slant in the stories that you care about, but it also has a feature called Blind Spot that identifies and introduces stories to you that are not getting equal coverage from the right and left, which is so helpful to any and all news consumers because it allows each and every one of us to move beyond our own biased media diets to consider what context we're missing. On top of Blind Spot, Ground News also has a local feed so you can plug in your own city and quickly identify the slant in the stories that are getting covered in your own local hometown. On top of this, there's also My News Bias, which tracks your own reading habits over time. With this, I can see my most read outlets, the bias of the stories I read, and even the topics and people I read the most about. It's basically a diet tracker for the news. And one final aspect I'd like to shout out is the ownership feature that Ground News has developed. They've analyzed well over 2,000 separate news sources to distill the ownership structure of each source into one of seven categories, ranging from wealthy individual private owners to government-owned and operated news sources, which again helps me understand why a story is being framed the way it is. The simple truth is that all media to a certain extent contains bias, and all media consumers, including myself, also carry some personal biases. So if you want to counter such factors, cut through all the rhetoric, political positioning, and organizational slant, you can go to ground.news/reallifelore, click the button here on screen right now, or follow the link that's down below in this video's description to try out Ground News today and save an amazing 40% off of your subscription with a Ground News Vantage Plan. It's a great way for you to stay better informed about our world, and it will also greatly help out my channel and support what I'm doing here on Real Life Lore at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.